Democrats passed a $56 billion Illinois budget in the last hours of the session. Why Republicans say taxpayers are getting the short end of the stick. A top Republican leader speaks out on the cities. Democrats say the $56 billion budget passed by lawmakers helps make up for revenue lost from cutbacks by a Republican president and a Republican Congress. But Illinois Republicans say it's the Democrats who cannot get their fiscal house in order. The final hours of the 2026 session ended with a whirlwind of major decisions coming down to the final hour, with little, if any, Republican input. In a way, what else is new? We talked with the House Minority Leader, Tony McCombie, a Republican from Savannah, about the end of the session, the new taxes you'll see, and how Republicans plan to run against the laws passed. Well, Leader McCombie, thank you for joining us. Tell me all about the last hours of this legislative session, because it's all about the budget, and I want to talk about bears as well, but let's talk about the last hours and trying to formulate a state budget.
Yeah, very similar to every year since I've been in office. After midnight is when all the action starts. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. I think it was because of all the bears' action or inaction. We had a lot of press in the Dome and really kind of saw how things are and shouldn't be. So, like always, we passed a budget at 4:13 in the morning in the House. But kind of interesting, we passed the budget implementation bill, the revenue, aka the tax bill, the capital bill, all before the budget. So we were certainly backwards. And, you know, once it goes after midnight, it takes 70 votes compared to 60. And last year, we saw some issues with Dem votes after midnight. This year, they had it all together and all voted.
Well, I mean, time and again, you point out that the Republicans, of course, are the minority party and that they don't have that big of a say in the budget. Did your party have more of a say this time around, whether it was during a committee or at any time on the floor?
Yeah, I wouldn't say a say. I think the speaker said collaboration, certainly no collaboration, but I will give kudos where they're due. We did have a very high level, the speaker and I, very high level conversation about 20 minutes about a month ago. And the day after that, the budgeteers in the House, the Republicans and Democrats, sat down and had a lengthier conversation, just really talking about, you know, some priorities, how the process is going to go. And then we didn't hear anything again until Sunday of the budget, so May 31st. But I'm not going to disregard that because we sat down with, well, I wasn't there, but our budgeteer sat down with staff and the House Dem staff. And that is very beneficial for our staff to try to get a handle. The staff really get, you know, run through the ringer on this process, you know, there for 2-3 days, getting about 6-7 hours of sleep. So I am thankful for that, at least. But there is a better way to do this. The governor proposes his budget in February. We could be sitting down offering solutions, offering shared priorities. And, you know, it would be great to vote for a budget. It would be great to have bipartisan legislation. The difference with this speaker compared to the last, bipartisanship isn't an important priority.
In the last, not this one.
Correct.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. I mean, because the days of Madigan, I think, is what you're referring to, are gone. So, I mean, do you notice that? I mean, how do I say that? The shadow of Speaker Madigan is somewhat out of the legislature now?
Oh, completely, I would say. I mean, here you have, you know, Speaker Madigan wanted bipartisan legislation because he wanted some damage control for his own members. Today, we're under a unwritten rule of 60, meaning any piece of legislation that comes forward has to have 60 Democrats before it comes to the House floor. So that doesn't bode well for bipartisanship in the House. It doesn't bode for advocates, associations, you know, organizations that you belong to advocate with Republicans to get votes, because it doesn't matter until they have their 60. So it just kind of puts everybody in an awkward position, adds to the divide in the House, which is really unfortunate.
Now, you did say that you were looking for a shared agreement on the budget. What would you say one of the biggest ones was? I mean, we're talking about a $56 billion budget, some 3,900 pages that were delivered to you by the end of the weekend. Is there any shared budget agreement that you were pleased made it?
Certainly, some of our priorities that were met as well as with the Democrats is the pension payment was paid. That's extremely important with the outstanding liability that we have there. Fully funding the evidence-based funding model as agreed. Last year, as you remember, $50 million was cut from the property tax grant relief part of that, so that was put back into the budget. Increasing some funding for our those folks that take care of our most vulnerable, that was increased. But in the next breath, it was the rate of pay was increased, but then their decrease of that they decreased the hours they could work. So it really wasn't a pay raise. And our most vulnerable certainly need more care than an average person. So there was certainly some good that we agreed with and would have supported regardless. But our priorities. We would like the HBIS, the healthcare for the non-citizens, illegal immigrants to be out of that, the welcome centers, the funding for non-citizens to be excluded from the budget, because especially in this time of affordability and when we're all trying to make it, here they go ahead and fund with our tax dollars a population that are not Illinois citizens, as well as, Jim, like every other year, feel it's necessary to give us a raise. I found it interesting. The governor was asked about that, and he said, "Well, everybody's suffering from inflation." Well, I got to push back a little bit on that. Maybe if we weren't taking a pay raise and the Democrats were passing pay raises, that would go over a little bit better, but not in this case.
Well, let's also talk about an estimated $800 million in new taxes. Taxes on social media companies, based on the number of users, digital assets, fantasy sports, tobacco, sports betting. Is this a proper way to raise revenue? I mean, if you're going to increase taxes, is this not the way to go?
No, and I think we need to quit talking about increasing taxes. Let's give that a pause. This will be the third, well, every year since the governor's been in, but the last 2 years was $1 billion, and this year is $800 million. So $2.8 billion in just 3 years of nickel diming. It was interesting. The Senate president said no working families or humans were going to be taxed. And he's talking about the social media, the fantasy, the digital, the prediction markets. But Jim, you and I both know humans are the users of those, and those fees and taxes are just going to be pushed down to the users. So it certainly is a tax for us. It might not be a tax for me because I don't get on the prediction markets or bet on fantasy sports or play in the crypto world, but it is going to be on others, and it just ends up getting passed. We need to really look at more of a structural way to reform how we collect taxes, how we pay taxes, and quite honestly, how we grow our state. Because the more people that leave Illinois, the less people that are here to pay the bill that is not going down.
Well, and the other argument for Republicans is also if you have that many taxes in Illinois, it doesn't attract business as well. And I mean, are you worried about that climate still?
Oh, for sure. I'm just kind of looking on my sheet here. I always keep it on my billboard, but we are one of the highest states for overall taxes. So certainly that is always a concern. And as people get older and look to retire, and you put that into the Google machine to try to figure out where is the best place for you to retire, Illinois is at the bottom, and at one time was at the top.
Let's talk about the Bears. That was a big, in the 13th hour, attempt to try to find a way to offer a way for the Bears to stay in Illinois. The Senate had approved kind of a sports stadium authority, basically allowing communities of 70,000 and more, which was basically Arlington Heights, to create these type of entities so that they could own the stadium and the Bears would not be paying taxes on that. Are you at all worried that the Chicago Bears are going to end up going to Hammond, Indiana, and that the legislature didn't do enough to keep them in Chicago?
Yeah, absolutely. The bill that we sent over, gosh, well over a month ago, really was more of a mega projects bill that had a that would have helped the Bears. And this is something that folks have been working on for like 3 years. If you had a $100 million investment or more, I think originally it was $500 million. If you're going to come to invest here. There are some things that are going to be helpful to you, ways to attract just what I'm talking about, growing our economic base, right? But that failed. That was a bipartisan bill as well. It wasn't perfect, but we knew over in the Senate they were going to put in the property tax protection language that was missed in the House. But unfortunately, they didn't have the members to vote on that. And then they, like you said, came over in the final hours with something similar to what Texas had did and other states have done to get the Bears and other NFL teams across the nation to have property tax certainty. I think it would have been what they needed. There would have been so much work for Arlington and the locals to still figure out all the different revenue sources and how that's all going to be shared. But they would have been able to figure that out. I think with the Democrats having the supermajority of the House and the Senate and the constitutional officers, the lack of them sitting down at a table with the Bears is really going to be the demise of us passing anything because there's going to be no special session called. You've heard the governor basically say it. You've heard Welch say it. You heard Harmon say it. We're not going to go back to the third week of November. You're hearing the Bears say they're going to be making a decision in the next month or the summer. And here we are going to be in November with no tools for the Bears or any investor to come to Illinois. So I am worried about that, and they're going to have to own this.
Does it bother you when you have sports teams like this that are basically saying, look, we need money or we're out the door? And taxpayers look at that and go, wait a second, these are businesses that make billions of dollars.
They just want certainty. They don't necessarily are looking for a handout. I mean, Indiana's given them a pretty good deal. I don't think that they were asking for that deal, and they certainly were not going to get that from Illinois, and they knew that. But to build a huge stadium like that and to possibly be taxed at this, we're the second highest property tax in the nation, to have, $30 million or $300 million, whatever the case may be for their property tax payment, why would they build there and invest there? They wouldn't. So I think to have that certainty, I don't think is unrealistic at all, regardless of big corporations or little companies. And
Let's
we
talk
have
about
TIF
it.
districts.
That's very true. Let's talk about education, though. I wanted to pivot to that real quickly. Fully funding K through 12 education, but also you passed that school cell phone ban, basically the bell to bell ban. There are some exceptions, of course, but for the most part, students will not be able to use cell phones in the classroom. I guess in a way, Illinois is really kind of following other neighboring states that have already done this.
Yeah, that was initiative of the governor's last year. And, a lot of the schools in my district here in Northwest Illinois have already put processes in place for not having cell phones in the classroom. So for me, in my area, it's probably not going to make much of a difference. And I'm going to assume that it's a lot of schools around the state have done that, especially in anticipation of this bill coming out last year. The big piece for us was that we wanted to make sure that there was still local control and the school boards could determine on what the rules were going to be. So that this was one of the initiatives that I certainly supported because my district supported.
Also, high tech was kind of issues that were looked at by the legislature, whether it's artificial intelligence or what was called the Power Act, which had to do more with data centers. Power Act didn't pass, it didn't get through the legislature. Is there more that the legislature needs to do? Because you're seeing state after state, particularly community and community and county by county, trying to rein in and understand the impact of data centers, either on the environment or on the county or city municipality.
Yeah, that's another shared priority. We want to make sure that water use is used properly, and now they have the closed loop so they can be reusing their own water, and that's great. Bringing their own power, I certainly think, is important, and how they do that, whether it's through a small nuclear reactor or whether that's solar there on their rooftops, however that they can bring in. Certainly, they take a lot of power and is a concern, but a big piece of all of that is zoning and just the uncertainty. Now, the data center incentive was froze, but it was not removed. Those dollars were not removed from the budget. So that could still come back because other states are doing that. If the governor really wants to take energy generation, work with the Clinton nuclear plant to get that other reactor up. Take away the closure dates for the coal and the natural gas that are, that were passed in CEJA. Those are things that we could fix to, businesses know that they're going to have energy, some certainty. It would certainly lower rates if we were generating more. I mean, today we're closing down coal in Southern Illinois, but we're bringing coal in that didn't manufacture and at the same way that we did here in Illinois with clean coal. They're bringing it on rail into Illinois. It makes absolute zero sense when we have coal right here, with good, clean processes.
Let's talk about the end of this session. If you were to give yourself and the legislature a grade, what would you say? I mean, how did this session compare to the last?
Well, House Republicans, of course, deserve an A for exposing and opposing bad policy, calling out the lack of transparency. We're the only checks and balances in a supermajority one-party rule. So certainly I would give us an A. And quite honestly, I would give the Democrats an F because they talk about the budget being a document of priorities, but it was a self-serving document of their own priorities, not taking in consideration the 102 counties, the Democrats that live in Republican districts. And so I'm going to have to give them an F. They did nothing to amend our property taxes. They did nothing to address ethics. And on top of it, they gave themselves a raise.
Yeah, this sounds like these are the issues that Republicans will be able to campaign on coming into the November election.
Yeah, I even told one of the budgeteers, I said, we're going to hit you on the pay raise. And he kind of chuckled. He goes, I know you are. And he goes, and it's a good hit. And I said, then take away our power. Don't give us that. But I tell you, it is a wild place that we work down there.
I didn't expect you to say that, but okay. Well, how do you campaign from this point forward? I mean, what do you think is going to be the issues? Because I mean, you've talked about budgets and you've talked about taxation. Those are issues that haven't gone away for Republicans. What's the big tangible one that's going to be different in 2026 that might, move the dial and get more Republicans in the legislature?
Well, unfortunately, we are in a midterm, and midterms are never good on a state level for the party in power on the federal level. So I really hope that the gas prices go down. I think that is something that's certainly important to all of us, especially, all of us that live in rural areas and spend a lot of time in our vehicles. Really just to continue to get people engaged because when you see things like this happen down in Springfield, people get so disengaged in the process and they're like, it doesn't matter. Our vote doesn't matter. They're going to do what they want to do and not tell us about it until it's already passed. We have to get out of that mindset and go to the polls and vote with our checkbooks because if you're looking at the budget, it hurts everybody. And the Democrats have been in control for 50 years and they've had their opportunity. So, under this map, it will be difficult, but we still have some opportunities in the state and certainly locally.
Our thanks to House Minority Leader Tony Macomb, Republican from Savannah. We're inching closer to the Independence Day holiday, with America marking its 250th birthday, but there's also a lot going on in the days leading up to the 4th. Here are some ideas for you, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Start your week off by hopping on the Celebration River Cruise. Enjoy a lunch buffet and a two-hour cruise along the majestic Mississippi River. Next, every Wednesday night, you can experience live music on the rooftop of the Up Sky Bar. There'll be appetizers, cocktails, and beautiful views. Then experience 3 days of comics, toys, panels, video games, and so much more at the Planet FunCon. Next, grab your running shoes for the Pride 5K at Bass Street Lane. Sign up for the 5K, 10K, or the costume contest. Finally, end your week with a free Yoga by the Band show. All ages and all levels are welcome. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
The Mississippi River has been the source of music for hundreds of years. It still is. Musician David G. Smith got a lot of inspiration while living in Iowa. He's from Dubuque County, but now calls Nashville home. His new album, Hero Street, is being released next week. Here's David G. Smith performing for us a few years ago with Listen to the River.
My wife is sitting right off camera here. That is an anniversary gift from my wife. And now I like to tell it that we were out looking for sewing machines. It's true. We were looking for sewing machines. And but we walked by this music store first. And she saw that guitar sitting in the window. And she said, "What's that?" And 2 hours later, we walked out with it. She bought it for me. Anniversary gift.
A blue jay was a friend of mine. He used to sing to me all the time. There was his reputation, but then again, he used to sing to me and I'd sing to him. Well, I'm down here by the river, I sit beneath the tree. I'm gonna listen to the river, talk to me. Hey. Summer wind was a friend of mine. From the ocean to the mountain pine. Used to sound the soothing rain. Now it's flooding hurricane. Well, I'm down here by the river. I'm gonna listen to the river. The river gonna talk to me. Mother Earth was a friendly face, with a fertile beauty and a patient wound. Throw a seed from a burlap sack. You know, we gave to her and she gave back. Well, I'm down here by the river.
I wrote that song, goodness, a long time ago. I don't want to date myself. Many years ago. It's about our environment, kind of some of the things that maybe it was just a prescient moment I had when I wrote it. You know, again, 20, 30 years ago, about what's going on these days. And so it's, you know, to keep it short, it's just, it's about environment and it's about, I guess, climate change and some of those things.
Well, I'm down here by the river, sitting beneath the tree. I'm listening to the river gonna talk to me. Well, I'm down here by the river, sitting beneath the tree. I'm gonna listen to the river, but the river won't talk. The river won't talk to me.
David G. Smith with Listen to the River. His new album, Hero Street, is being released on Thursday, the 25th. And you can pre-order by heading to his website, davidgsmithmusic.com. 250 years ago, in 1776, a nation was created. But decades earlier, in 1730, a public library was founded. Ben Franklin created the Library Company of Philadelphia. Before then, libraries were private collections of books, but not in this new country. Well, we've spent the past year asking people about their civic spark, what motivates them. And we asked that question to the head of a modern-day library. Here's Angela Campbell, director of the Rock Island Public Library.
Librarians, and public libraries especially, are unique to public culture. In the United States, we're one of the only areas that have a public library where people can just better themselves. So when I knew I wanted to be a librarian since I was 14 years old, when I had my first library job, and I saw how we positively affected everyone's lives that walked in, either through job help or just reading or literacy or all the programs that we offer. It's the one place everyone's welcome, and it's free to use, and it's crowdfunded, and I just think it's the greatest place on earth.
Our thanks to Angela Campbell, director of the Rock Island Public Library. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.